Grant, you retired in March 2001. You were in the forestry for a very long time. You must have seen a lot of changes. When did you actually start in the forest?
Well, I joined the Forestry Commission, or my forestry career then, in November 1960. I was recruited to a Forestry Commission in Kilgwyn Forest, which is just outside Llandovery. And I spent a year there, and then I moved to Cayo Forest for the next couple of years, when I was accepted to go to forestry school in 1963. During the period when I was in Cayo, I was asked to go to Towy Forest. That's my first escapade into Llandovery Forest in 1963 to get some knowledge of ploughing, or preparation of ground then for planting. I spent, unfortunately, it was January and February 1963 that I went up to Towy first of all.
That was the year of the hard forest, hard frost rather.
It was very cold, yes, even the time that I was there, it wasn't actually raining, the rain wasn't falling down, the rain was actually blowing horizontally. But I went up there to join a ploughman called Trevor Pocock. My job was to be his banksman for the 6 weeks. And what I did was I walked along behind this Cuthbertson reversible plough that they were using. And at the end of each plough furrow, I had to turn this reversible plough over so that he could plough back again in the same, but ploughing in the same direction. And what got it to me at that time was that it rained almost every day, it snowed in between, it was dreadfully cold. Much of the time the other forest workers who were there actually spent a lot of time in the shed sitting around the fire because it was too wet and too cold for them to be doing anything. And here was poor me having to walk along this plough, which had huge wheels on it. The wheels were about 6 foot tall, and of course the way of keeping out of the wind and the rain was to walk alongside in the shelter of these wheels,
right,
from one side to the other. So that was my initiation into Towy Forest.
I'll never forget it.
Once you've been there and done it, it's something you never forget, basically.
So in those days, this plough didn't have an automatic changeover then?
No, it had to be done by hand, and you had to pull it and heave it and push it over and turn it over. It was quite a difficult task for somebody who was an 18-year-old who'd not really been used to physical work until it sort of joined the Forestry Commission. But it was a good experience, really. It was almost my first time away from home, spending 6 weeks up in Tregaron. Fortunately, I had a sister who lived in Tregaron, and therefore I was able to stay with my sister and brother-in-law, which helped quite considerably.
So you had the home comforts after coming in from the cold and winter?
It was indeed, yes. It was very nice just to have somebody to get home in the evening. But it sort of makes a man of you, I think, at having to work in that sort of environment for a period of time. Everything else after that was sweet and honey, basically.
So you were in at the planting stage, and if you were using this plough?
I mean, the planting actually started in Towy in 1954, I think, in Dunawen. And then it started something like 1956 or 1957 up in Ystafflir, in Pantaf Edwin. And it was now 1963, and the planting moved up the hill and got up to Towy Fechan, which was where this ploughing and preparation of ground was being done. At that time, John Jones was the forester there, and had been the forester there for some time. And there was I don't know exactly how many people were, but there certainly was a lot of people being employed from the Tregaron
Pontryfyndigau
area at that time. So that was my first experience basically of TAWI. Then I went away from there back to Cayo Forest for a period of time, and then in September 1963 I went to forestry school and 2 years up there. I came back from forestry school and was then given my first posting, which was in Ebo Forest. Went down there for a fortnight. Went down there for a week, got to know the people there, started finding my way around, and then at the end of the first week, the chief forester called me in and said, don't unpack your bags, you're off. Week Monday, you're to report back to TAWI Forest again for my second visit.
Well, that's certainly the area that we're interested in, and especially the North TAWI.
I went back there in 1965, about October 1965, and at that time the chief forester there was Danny Lewis, and John Jones was the forester for North TAWI, Evan Jones a foreman in charge of South TAWI, and I was given responsibility for TAWI Centre. Now, having been in forestry school, learnt all the theoretical way of doing forestry, I've done a little bit of practicals. I was dropped in the middle of TAWI Forest and told, that's the area you're going to plant next year. There are 22 forest workers who are going to give you all the assistance that you need in order to get this area planted. Luckily, there was Marion Davis was there before me. Marion was moving away, and I was going there to replace him. And I did have a week with Marion, which was very valuable, basically, in that he put me in the picture as to how to put the theory into practice, if you like, and what was required, and what was how to plan and prepare and get this work done, and prepare for planting. My biggest problem was having to get up early in the morning.
Yes.
The lorry in Tregaron, even though I was now the foreman, got the foreman's job or the forester's job. I wasn't given a vehicle. I was then to catch the lorry at 7:10 square in Tregaron, up into the mountain. Back in the evenings, 4:30, and then went to do the office work after that. So I was working 10, 11 hour days for my probation period, which was for the first 2 years. But then again, you really do get to learn how the job's done.
Well, was this the policy of the forest to show you in at the deep end and then do the paperwork in the evening?
Well, I suppose it was. It was a way of getting the youngsters to learn the trade, basically, and that if you throw them in at the deep end, then you have to learn as you go along, and you have to find out for yourself, and you have to go and ask your elders or your bosses, basically, as to...
Did the men make it difficult for you, make it harder?
No, actually, they were very good. They were excellent, basically. Some of the best staff that I've ever worked with were people from TAWI Forest, basically. You got all the assistants. I mean, they'd all worked there for a number of years, so they were all quite experienced in terms of how to plant and how to prepare the ground and what have you. They also had some of the gangers there who were excellent, basically. So you sort of took them along. If you didn't know what to do, we took them along, and you very cleverly said, "Well, what would you normally do here?"
Yeah.
And they would say, I would do hinge turfs here, or we'd do inverted turfs, or we'd plough this, or we'd do that. And you would say, yeah, that's what I was thinking. You might not know what the answer was, but you cleverly got to know these things. And gradually you learnt how to prepare the ground, how to plan it, and what machinery was needed, what men were needed, and what tools were needed in terms of getting the work done. But as far as my first experience was, I was very green. I had 22 people in this lorry going up with me in the mornings. We had to find work for these 22 people from the first day, from the first minute you were there until the end of each day. But generally, it worked out exceptionally well, and I had a group of very hard working and very willing people working with me to get this planting done. There were also people like John Jones and Danny Lewis there to give us a hand or give us some advice or to assist whenever that was necessary. It was good, but I mean, it was experience again, something that I don't think people nowadays get the experience of, jumping in the lorry with the men first thing in the morning and coming back in the evening with them and then working 10, 11 hour days. Nowadays, which wasn't anything different to me because I didn't know anything different.
Right.
This was what I thought the job was all about, and therefore that's what we did.
Did you have any dealings with the local people, like the farmers and the?
Yes, to some degree. Yes,
or had all this work been done?
One of the problems I encountered there was to find. Where the boundaries were, there were no hedges and walls or anything that identified where the boundary was between the Forestry Commission land that they bought and the neighbour's land. But we had Rhys Hughes, who was who lived locally in Diffus. He lived at the time and moved to Cumberwyn. He knew the land and he knew the ground very well. He was the shepherd for the Forestry Commission as well. So whenever I needed to get the boundaries marked out, I used to take Greece with me. And Greece used to say, well, it goes from here and over onto that corner there, and see that stone over there and over here and over there. And that's the way we used to mark it out. I had a map and I could survey it out the best I could. But basically, he knew it better than I did, even if I was having to survey fence lines and things of this sort. So it was having people with knowledge and experience that really got you through.
Why would the forest have a shepherd?
Well, there were sheep everywhere, all over the mountain. Basically, all the farmers had kept sheep.
Yes.
Thousands and thousands.
Yes.
And well, there was thousands and thousands of acres. The number of sheep per acre was very small in terms of being two or three per acre. But in overall, there were a lot of sheep. Now, when we were preparing an area for planting, the first thing we needed was to take the sheep off the land, fence the land, take the sheep out. And then when we planted the ground, we had to keep the sheep out because the sheep ate the plants.
Yes.
We put the little trees in the ground. If you didn't take the sheep off, the sheep, as the ground got hard and the snow came down, of course the sheep had nothing else to browse on except for the trees. And therefore, we have to keep the sheep off the planted ground, and that's what the shepherd did.
And did you experience?
The shepherd didn't actually look after the sheep. His job was to keep the sheep off the planted land.
But were there problems because there's such a lot of acreage up there and such a lot of sheep? Did these sheep were they owned by one farmer, or was your forest or your shepherd being able to separate them as that belongs to that farm, etc.?
Oh, we're back again into knowledge and experience again. Rhys Hughes knew everybody's node. You could look at the sheep and you could tell who owned it. And he made a point of taking it back. If he took it off our land, he took it back to the owner, or at least put it back in the owner's land. So that, the sheep kept to the, it was amazing basically, in that the sheep seemed to know which land they belonged to, and they kept to their side of the land. Of course, when we planted, we fenced off certain areas, then the sheep had a tendency to try and get back onto that land, which was land that they'd grazed over many years probably. But no, we got on very well with most of the neighbours. It was actually amazing basically. There was a neighbour called Mr. Jones from Dolgoch, who I understood at the time, he was in his 80s, and there was nothing to see him early in the morning, even before we got there. He'd be on horseback, going round his sheep.
Right.
Early in the morning, at the age of 80.
Yeah.
It was absolutely amazing, basically. Although we never really, we planted a lot of Dol Goch. I was, as a part of Tawi Centre, Dol Goch was my area, the area that I looked after.
Right.
And the area that I started planting back in the 1960s.
So would it be true to say then that by having this local knowledge through this shepherd, it kept the peace between the Forestry Commission and the farmers?
Well, yes. I mean, we knew the neighbours. We got to know. It was one of the things that everybody knew everybody in that area. I mean, you take together on Pontry de Digaid, you find that especially in the 60s, in the early years, everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew who lived where and when and who was related to who and what have you. So even when I went in as a stranger, if they didn't know you, they'd come and ask you, who the hell are you? And you'd get to know them, and therefore, gradually, you'd get to know people. I mean, one of the things that we used to do annually with John Jones was to go to Nant Llwyd for lunch on the day that they were doing
shearing.
And it was an annual thing that John Jones would come and pick me up, and we'd go down for lunch. And you meet all the local farmers and all there, so you get to know them, not just by name, but you could put a face to it and get to know them personally. So that if there was any problem that was arising with fencing or sheep or whatever, then they would talk to you personally, and therefore you get to know them, therefore you sort out any problems that you had face to face. And the problem never really arose in that. Not only did I get to know all the people who were there, but people like John Jones, who'd been there for many years, knew them all. Rhys Hughes was the shepherd, knew everybody. So if there was a problem with fencing or with the sheep or whatever, they would get in touch with him. He'd come and would talk to me, and we'd sort out whatever the problem was. So as far as the neighbours were concerned, we were all one big reasonably happy family, basically.
Nice.
It was quite amusing at times. I mean, basically, Mr. Jones Dol Goch came along one day on his horse, and we were fencing off a bit of land that we were going to plant next year. And instead of although the commission had bought all his land, he was still grazing it. And I was now marking out temporary fencing areas in between what we plant this year and next year. And although I wanted to take the fence down a straight line, which would have taken some of his grazing away, he wanted us to follow another route, which would have given him a little bit of extra fencing, and we sort of talked about it, and we came to a compromise, so we put a bit of a bend in it. He was happy and I was happy. So, but it was very rough, coarse grass sort of area. Wasn't particularly good area, but it's still important to Mr. Jones that he was losing this sort of half an acre of land or whatever it was of rough grazing for his sheep. And from my point of view, it was costing us a little bit more to get the fencing done than I would have liked if we'd gone in a straight line. But we came to a compromise. We agreed where maybe we should change the line somewhat and to keep everybody happy. So there was good communication basically between the neighbours, and that is perhaps something that maybe we're now losing, in that the staff are getting more concentrated in and around the office area where they live. Whilst in those days there were a lot of small forests scattered all over, and the foresters or the management people lived within the community, in which case you got to know everybody.
But it's almost like every other institution, isn't it? The personal touch is gone.
Yeah, I mean, yes, there's an evolution in terms of how things are changing. We're having to change, basically, to meet present-day demands, basically, and the costs have to be kept under control.
Geraint, did you come across any problems relating to the purchase of the land from farmers in the Tawi area. Was there any controversy, or how did you find it?
Not personally, no, I didn't. I met a lot of the people, and yes, there was, of course, there's always been. If there's any change, then yes, there are people do have a grievance, and people do object, and but in general, I think that there was a changeover taking place in that the older people, the older farming community up in the tops, would farm there for a number of years, for many, many years, probably all their lives to some extent. We're now getting to a stage where they would like to have passed it on to their children, but their children started having other thoughts, because it wasn't the best of places to be in. You know, for 8 months of the year, it was a pretty bleak sort of place to work, and a place to shepherd the sheep. So I think that the next generation were looking at perhaps going further down into the valley and buying. So if there was if they could sell the land, even though they were selling it by thousands of acres maybe at the time, to the Forestry Commission, who were really prepared to buy it, then they could use that money to buy an alternative farming farm down in the valleys, where they could, instead of having the number of acres to the sheep, they could have a number of sheep to the acre, and therefore earn the same return for a much easier and a better life, basically, than trying to live on land that was so far away from everywhere, basically. The forestry also brought some additional compensation, basically, in terms of we built roads, which gave access to any remaining land up on the mountain much easier. It brought trees which gradually grew and gave a lot of shelter, which meant that there was better grass growth there, there was shelter for the animals, for the sheep, and therefore it could probably improve the quality and the number of sheep that they could keep on the mountain as well. And so I'm sure that some of the younger, the new generation of farmers who were thinking ahead thought that there was benefits to be brought by having forestry up there. The drawback was, and it's still the same, was that here we are planting Sitka spruce everywhere, and there were this blanket of woodland of Sitka spruce going to cover the whole of the mountains. Yes, this was very true, and at that time we did blanket it in terms of planting the main species that we planted in the time in the early in the 60s that I was there, was Sitka spruce. We had a little bit of lushboard pine in the peat bogs. We planted a little bit of larch on the drier slopes, but in essence it was all Sitka spruce. Well, that's changed now. I mean, the whole policy has changed now, in that we're looking at landscaping, we're looking at the diversity of species, and looking at wildlife, and looking at conservation, recreation, and all the rest of it. But that time, back in 1960s, it was a commercial proposition that we were aiming for in terms of planting trees to provide timber for the future. And that timber, the best species for planting, to get reasonable growth and reasonable returns, was Sitka spruce.
So would you identify that as the biggest change in your era then, rather than this blanket with these green trees?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. When in the first few years that I was planting up on the top of Tawi, it never occurred to me to plant any broadleaves, any hardwoods. It never occurred to me to do any landscaping. It never occurred to me to think of conservation or recreation or whatever. Okay, there were black grouse and things up there, which you wouldn't find in many other areas. It was a species of bird that was very, very rare. But we didn't identify that. We didn't do anything to help, to encourage it, to help it to exist. We just planted trees. The object of my exercise was to get every small square meter of land planted up, because I was looking at it from a commercial point of view and saying, well, I'm going to put as many trees on this because in 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, I'll be able to reap the returns that this will bring me. But it was only in money terms. And therefore, my attitude was totally different from what it is now. In that,
it was the end product you were looking for?
Absolutely, absolutely. We were factory farming trees, basically. And that's changed now into saying there's much more to forestry than just planting trees. And now we look at it in terms of what other benefits can forestry bring to the general public, to the people of Wales, if you like, and to people of Tregaron and Pontrhyfyn Degaid in particular. So there's been a huge change in emphasis, basically, as to how we approach and work forestry. I spent a few years in St Avery as a planning manager, and part of my job and my team was to plan for the future, plan on how we were going to fell the trees that had already been planted, how we were going to restock and replant some of these areas, whether we were going to plant some of it, whether we were going to plant it with a different variety of species rather than just Sitka spruce and lodgepole pine. Could we improve the wildlife habitats that we had, and how we could make the areas more accessible to people in terms of recreation, in terms of conservation.
Do you remember the era of the red kite, well, when it was very much protected?
Well, when I first went there was no red kite in the area. When we go back to the 1960s, there was red kite was something I'd never heard of, basically. And gradually, the red kite appeared in the Pontrhyfyn Degaid area and Tregaron area, and it's gradually over the years spread and increased in the numbers. I can remember initially they were saying there was only a dozen pairs or something that they could find in the whole of Wales. Now we're into the hundreds. In fact, I'm living now in Carmarthen, and it was only yesterday that I actually saw a red kite out the back here. So it's spread and it's.
Do you remember people looking, protecting these nests up there?
No, I don't. No, I mean at the time back in the 60s when I was there, and even in the 80s, there wasn't the red kite hadn't spread that far. It was gradually working its way down towards Llandovery. But basically it was around the Tregaron area and the Pontrhyfyn Degaid Ystrydfur area that there were these few pairs that were breeding.
What is the age cycle of a typical spruce that you planted in Geraint?
Well, it varies quite considerably. Basically, we were looking at it at the economic. We were looking at an economic cycle in the early years, and that would have been somewhere around 45 or 50 years. Now, that to some extent has changed because our attitude again has changed. As I was saying just now about diversity, we're now looking for a diversity of age within the forest as a whole. In other words, we would like to have trees at 1 year old, up to 50 year olds, up to 100 year olds. So to get that, then we have to vary the age at which we fell trees. Just to give you an example, I planted the first area that I planted in 1965 when I first went there as a forester, was an area in Diffwys, which is in Tywi Centre. That area was felled in the middle 90s, which means that it was 30 year old when it was felled. There are other areas there which were planted at around about the same time and are still standing. So those planted in the early 60s are now getting on for 40 year olds.
Yeah.
Some of them will be kept even longer than that, so that we have a diversity of age for the trees all through the forest. So this is something that's changed completely from... We started thinning in... Atawi Forest in 1978. This was done in Dala, the older trees that were planted in 1954. Then gradually we worked their way through Atawi Forest and the Atawi North, as we used to call the Ystrad Fflur, the Pandyfedwen areas, was then thinning was started there in the early 80s and carried on since. We started felling, that is clear felling some of the trees, which were due to wind blow, basically, back in the early 80s as well. And gradually that's expanded in that the forest design plans, which we're now working to, took into account all sorts of things in addition to the age of the trees, so that we got all this diversity that we were looking for. So we've been felling trees all over the Tawi Forest, basically, but in a planned form rather than in relation to age.
Do you know these diversity of age of trees? Is that because of what they were to be used for eventually, or is that because of what you wanted left in the forest?
Well, in the beginning, the sequence was that you planted the trees, and 20 to 25 years later, they were due for thinning, depending on the rate of growth. You went in and you thinned them, and then you thinned them every 5 years or so on the thinning cycle, until they came to the age of about 40, 45 or 50 years. And at that stage, the trees that are left were the big trees and the best trees, because you thinned out the smaller trees and the weaker trees and the badly formed trees, so that you had the best trees scattered over the area and the bigger trees left at the age of 45 or 50. And so you've clear felled them, and then you started the cycle again. You replanted it, and then the cycle restarted. It was to a great extent to meet the economic requirements, really, because the bigger trees were of greater value to us, because they went into milling timber for construction timber and what have we, whilst the smaller trees were cut principally into pulpwood or fence material. It changed somewhat over the years, in that if we went for this diversity, then trees that we felled at 30-year-old weren't as big as those that were felled in when they were 50-year-old. There were trees that had not been thinned because of the ground conditions and the windiness of the area that we were in. Then we wouldn't thin them because of the danger of getting wind blow.
Right.
So in order to minimise the possibilities of getting wind blow, we wouldn't thin them. So the ones that were not thinned tended to get felled earlier because of the danger of having wind blow, whilst the ones that were grew on the better ground grew faster, gave us bigger trees, and we kept them longer. The object will be to keep trees as long as we possibly can in certain areas, in the sheltered areas, in the areas with better ground, so that we get this diversity of big trees, small trees and what have we, which will encourage the wildlife, basically. It'll also add to the amenity and the landscape value of the land, and also in terms of recreation. People who walk through a woodland like to see small trees, big trees, middle-sized trees, all sorts of the diversity adds to the picture that people get of the forest.
So even though we're interested in the history of the forest with this project, I gather from what you're saying that we're to look forward to a change in landscape very much to the better in the future then?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I think that if we go back in, or if I go back in, say, 20 years' time, basically, the whole landscape will have changed quite considerably, basically. There will be broadleaves, which have now been planted, beginning to show that the colours, basically, on on the tops, on the mountain tops, there'd be a bigger variety of species. There'd be the trees will fit into the landscape very much better than they did before.
What?
We will lose this blanket of spruce that we used to have.
Why do you think that this wasn't done then in the 50s and 60s?
Well, the whole attitude was changed. I mean, basically, it was all... the Forestry Commission's objectives was to have a reserve of timber. Therefore, you planted the timber, the tree that would grow best on that soil at that altitude. And that turned out to be Sitka spruce. And therefore, anywhere where we thought this Sitka spruce would grow best, we would plant Sitka spruce. The alternatives in terms of larch and lodgepole pine would have been, would only come about if the soil and ground conditions warranted it. So we would plant Sitka spruce blankets on it. But the object of the exercise was to have a reserve of timber, which to make up for all the timber that was felled in the First and Second World War time. So the government objective changed, basically. And now with the Assembly, other factors have taken over from the economic aspect, although the economic aspect is still important. Other aspects have taken on a much greater emphasis, really, than they were back in the 1950s and 1960s.
I understand, Geraint, you were involved in a bit of a drama up in the mountains there.
Well, yeah, there was a murder actually that occurred in the early 80s up on the mountains within Towie Forest area, and I was asked to go down and meet the police at the incident room, and they were looking for this person who they thought had been involved, and they thought they knew that he was somewhere up on the mountains, or they thought he was somewhere up on the mountains. Of course, within the area, Towie Forest area, there were a number of cabins that we used in for wet weather. There was a number of derelict houses which the commission had bought over the years, and although the police knew the location of some of these, they didn't know about all of them, and therefore I had to spend a day with a number of policemen, a number of police dogs, a number of guns, not how we, and we went round all of these derelict houses, these cabins and sheds that we had about this. So that I could identify where they were, and for them to go in and see if this person was there or had been there over the few days that they'd been looking for. We didn't actually find anybody, because it turned out in the end that he had actually gone from the area. But that was quite an interesting day, basically.
Were you frightened?
I kept far enough away, basically.
Right.
But they were very methodical and knew exactly what they were doing. In that, you would initially send the dogs in, and the dogs would then identify as to whether the place was empty or not. And when it was, when they found that it was empty, then they went in and cleared the place out. And then I went in and had a look around just to see if anything had moved or changed or something that was there or that should have been, that shouldn't be there, or something that wasn't there that should have been there, or whatever. But we didn't really find anything or anybody.
Did they catch up with this chap?
They did eventually, yes. He was arrested and convicted, but nothing to do with me, I'm afraid.
Do you know where they found him?
He'd gone from the area across into Llanwrtyd, and spent a night in Llanwrtyd, as I understand it. Then he went on down to Hampshire, and I think they eventually arrested him at Hampshire. And he was charged and taken to court and convicted for the murder.
You've got a couple of interesting tales, Geraint.
Well, yes, interesting. I found them quite interesting and even frightening at the time. The first one relates to a farmer who rang up one day and said, I've got a field next to one of your plantations. I want to control burn it. I want to burn the
dead grass.
The dead grass had grown quite roughly over it, and he wanted to burn it off so the fresh grass would come up earlier. So he said, yes, okay, sir, we'll come along and we'll help you control burn a strip along the forestry to protect the forest. And we'll meet you there at sort of 11 o'clock in the morning, I think it was, a nice sunny day. So we turned up, and a whole lorry load of us, and we got out, and we met the farmer, and everything was okay. And then all of a sudden the farmer got on his horse, and he had behind him on a piece of rope, a piece of sacking, which he must have dumped in some accelerant, paraffin or something. He duly lit this sacking, and off he went through this horse. Now, this wasn't what we call controlled burning, because across the mountain he went with this burnt sacking on sack on fire behind him, and we were supposed to keep control over this fire. Our intention was to burn a little bit at a time, sort of 10 metres and put it out, another 10 metres and put it out. Oh no, he was hundreds and hundreds of yards away, and there was a whole ring of fire. So we all panicked and chased after it and put the fire out as best as we could. It frightened the life out of me, and I think that it frightened the life out of everybody else, because this wasn't controlled burning. There was no control at all of it. The other incident that happened, I wasn't personally involved with it, but John Jones, who was the forester in Towie North, went for a walk around the woods one evening and came across this little campfire, and in this campfire were three or four people dressed in type of army uniform of some kind. It turned out they were the Free Wales Army, and the Free Wales Army were on manoeuvres by the look of it, all four or five of them. And they were camping out on forestry land near the stream near Pandavedwen. And John, being a member of the local army cadet force, sat down and duly talked to them. I'm not sure whether he didn't talk about tactics and manoeuvres with them, but it seemed as if they were spending the weekend up in the mountains having manoeuvres on behalf of the Free Wales Army. I don't know whether they had real guns or didn't have real guns. All I can say is that a number of weeks later, John was visited by a senior detective from Aberystwyth wanting to know what was going on, because I think a farmer had complained that he'd found a sheep that had been shot up in the mountain, and the police were making inquiries. And I don't think I would have had the guts that John Jones had to go and talk to these people who were pretty amateurish in terms of their army experience, I would have thought. But John, being the character that he was, almost felt at home with him.
Lovely.
Of course, the other big change that's happened is how many people were employed. When I went there in 1965, I think there were somewhere in the region of 40 to 45 people being employed there. Those were the people who were permanently employed there. There were people who came in, the tenants, as we used to call them, who came in to do ploughing, added two, three or four, added extra people to it. Also, the roads people, the civil engineering branch came in. I would bring another 20 or so people in at certain periods of time when they were building roads around the Towie Forest area. I think that at one time we used to make the pay up for about 60 to 65 people at the maximum. This was back in around the 1960s. Since then, the recruitment has been slowed down and it came to nothing really. and people have left, and people have retired, and people have left for all sorts of reasons. Until I think now that we probably employ no more than one directly employed person within the Tawi Forest area then, because Tawi has now been amalgamated into a Llandovery Forest District. So it covers a very large area, and Llandovery Forest District covers a large area, and Tawi is only basically a part of it. But that's the change, huge change that has taken place from the early 50s and 60s when they used to apply a large number of people into the small area that Tawi Forest was at the time. Because, simply because there was planting and prep ground going on there. We were planting in the region of 1,000 acres per year at the height. And I think that it grew to something like 11,000-12,000 hectares eventually. So it was quite a large forest area, concentrated basically between Llandir Mwyn in the south and Pont Rhyw Fendigaid in the north. Tregaron in the west and the Ilan Valley watershed in the east, and it was all concentrated in that sort of area. But that's one of the big changes that has taken place, in that in the 50s and 60s it employed a large number of people coming from Pont Rhyw Fendigaid, Tregaron, Llandewi Brefi and Llandir Mwyn. Was one of my claims to fame, in, as far as North Tawi is concerned, is that I was responsible for the first clear felling of trees. This was on the part of the Penderfyn Wen Estate, in that trees had been planted there probably privately before the commission started, back in, I can't remember exactly, but somewhere around the early 1920s. And there was a block of larch it must have been one of the fields from the Penderfyn Wen, Croft area of Penderfyn Wen. They were quite large trees, they'd been well thinned. In the late 1960s, we sold the timber off them to Lampeter Sawmills, and we felled the timber and took them out to roadside and stacked them at the side of the road. Best that we could, and lorries came in and collected them and took them away. So I suppose my claim to fame would be that I was responsible for the first clear felling in Tawi Forest.
So what, that would have been the first commercial venture in a way then?
It was the first, yes, I suppose the first real income that we had acquired from the forest, within the forest district, from the felling of trees. In the late 60s.